was on another level when she got a book of metal. She was dead in her grave after all she gave, after all she gave. Bell, every time they'd overlook her when they gave her a book, and she was dead in her grave after all she.
It's episode 4052, Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast. They've got their story. We've got ours. We like ours better.
It's too late to dabble, is a soul too late. It's too late to dabble, is a soul too late.
He is Mark Knopfler. It's from an upcoming record that is yet to be released called Tracker. It's due to be released next month, March 2015. Pre-buy the record, as I have, and you will get this track, Beryl, B-E-R-Y-L. Until he recorded this song about her, I'd never heard of her. Not surprising. I'm hardly an expert on British novelists. Dame Beryl Margaret Bainbridge died almost 5 years ago. 1 year after her death, she was given special recognition by the Man Booker Prize for Fiction. It's a UK award that is given to the best novel written and published in the UK. It's right there in the first lyrics of the tune. She was nominated repeatedly for that award during her lifetime. But the point of Knopfler's song, Beryl, on this upcoming album, Tracker, is that her recognition came after she died. According to an article on ultimateclassicrock.com, quote, the former Dire Straits frontman uses her as an example of someone who was not properly recognized in her lifetime, singing every time they'd overlook her. When they gave her a booker, she was dead in her grave. After all she gave. Says Knopfler, the album title Tracker arrived out of me trying to find my way over the decades. Knopfler said, out of me tracking time, looking at people, places, and things from my past, and out of the process of tracking, as in recording tracks in the studio. Well, now that got my attention. Tracking the people, places, and things of our past. Because, well, isn't that what makes up our story? Okay, not just our past, but it's the people, it's the places, it's the thing of our past and our present and our future that makes up our story. I wrote down the title to today's show. I wrote this down a while back, and I can't remember where I heard it, but I thought it was from Jackie Childs, you know, that overly articulate lawyer on Seinfeld.
So, you know, my friend and I, we were going to the movies, and we stopped off and bought this cafe latte.
Mm-hmm. What is that, like Italian coffee?
Yeah, that's right.
Half milk, half coffee?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You take a sip?
Yes, I did.
Now, when you took a sip, did you notice it was hot? Were you able to sip it in your normal fashion?
No, I wasn't able to sip it in my normal fashion.
Mm-hmm. All right, all right. You take big sips?
Well, I think I take a normal sip.
Okay, you take normal sips. Nothing wrong with that. Then what happened?
Well, you know, they don't allow outside drinks in the movie theater, so I had to put it in my shirt and sneak it in.
Yeah, see, they like to sell their own coffee.
Yeah. Now, is that going to be a problem?
Yeah, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem for them. It's a clear violation of your rights as a consumer. It's an infringement on your constitutional rights. It's outrageous, egregious, preposterous.
It's definitely preposterous.
So, then what happened?
Well, I was trying to get to my seat, and I had to step over someone, and I kind of got pushed, and it spilt on me.
Was there a top on it?
Yeah.
Did you put the top on, or did they put the top on
no,
for you?
They put the top on.
And they made the top. You didn't make the top, did you? Susan, I want you to go down to Java World. Get me a cafe latte with a top. We're gonna run some tests on that doc.
Wow.
Have you been to the doctor?
No, I haven't.
Susie, call Dr. Bison. Set up an appointment for Mr. Kramer here. Tell him it's for me.
So, what do you think, Mr. Charles?
Jackie.
Jackie, I mean, we got a chance?
Do we have a chance? You get me one coffee drinker on that jury, you gonna walk out of there a rich man.
They've got their story, we've got ours, and we like ours better. Doesn't that sound like something that Jackie would say? But in spite of all of my Googling, I couldn't find it. Okay, it doesn't matter. It's a great line, and it sounds like the line that a good attorney might use. But I'm not using it like an attorney might. I'm using it more like Mark Knopfler might. His new album is his story. It's about the people, places, and things of his past, and it's his unique story. And Mark probably likes his story better than one that belongs to somebody else. I'm guessing. They've got their story. Everybody does. Sometimes the beginning of the story, okay, it's not very nice. It could be poverty, it could be drugs, it could be crime, it could be abuse. Children are born every day into really horrible circumstances. Those are the parts of the story for way too many kids. And it's part of the history, unfortunately, of too many adults. Sometimes things don't go well. Sickness, it knocks us down and it drags us out, or somebody we love. Bad things are part of everybody's story. And we can be subjected to things that are not our fault. And sometimes we can suffer because, well, we've made a foolish choice. We've made a foolish decision. We got in trouble for it, or we paid some price for it. Good things, they work the same way. I mean, sometimes there are these happy accidents that, well, we didn't have any influence over these things. And other times they happen because, well, we have worked our tails off to make them happen. We have chased an opportunity. We have fought hard. They've got their story. It's not your story. You didn't have a choice in their story. It's one of the big reasons that I hate the constant quest that so many people seem to rely on, wanting to be taught the formula. I want to be taught the secret. Show me how to do it. People want the tactics. They want the techniques for success. It doesn't matter what the endeavor might be. I mean, most people, they want the recipe. They want the step-by-step instruction manual to replicate the success of their favorite hero. You know, it's not like learning a piece of software. It's not like learning some technology. And by the way, this isn't an indictment of their hero. It's just the simple truth that they are not their hero. They don't have the same story. And as a result, the same formula, it won't apply to them. And when it doesn't work, they look for another hero to teach them because, well, that didn't work. I just wish more people would own their story and spend more time figuring it out for themselves. I know the temptation is it's to envy somebody else's story, or the temptation to follow somebody else's story template. Now, thankfully, I am now old enough to know that it doesn't work. So for me, the temptation is lower than it once was. That may not be the case for you. I hope it is. And I hope you'll accelerate that learning. We've got our story. Like everybody else, our story is evolving. You used to be a high school student. Maybe you still are a high school student for all I know. You had a story, though, in high school. And now that you are beyond high school, maybe like me, you're way beyond high school, the story is different. The most likely to succeed, okay, maybe they succeeded only in finding multiple trips to rehab. Or maybe they found their way to a valley startup that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know. You know, the captain of the high school football team may have changed his story to an overweight wife abuser. Or he could be an inspiring high school football coach who gives himself to helping underprivileged kids. The stories that were our story in high school may or may not be our story later on, because stories aren't static. Well, especially not while they're being written. You know, as long as you're alive, you're still crafting your story. Donald Miller, he wrote an entire book about crafting the story of his life in a book entitled A Million Miles in a Thousand Years. There are links to all this, by the way, over at the show notes over at leaningtowardwisdom.com. Plug in the number 4052 in the search this website box, and it'll take you right there. In his book, In A Million Miles in a Thousand Years, here is part of what Publishers Weekly said about the book. Two movie producers contacted him about creating a film out of his life, but Miller's initial enthusiasm was dampened when they concluded that his real life needed doctoring lest it be too directionless for the screen. Real stories, he learned, require characters who suffer and overcome. It's a worthwhile read. It was for me. I read it a few years back, but if you've not read it, you should. Because in the book, we see Mr. Miller, he wrestles with the notion that his life, it's just not large enough. It's not large enough to make an interesting movie. And so he needs to work harder on his story. And the book is really his effort to do just that. I would describe it as part self-awareness, self-examination, experience making, and human connection. And when you read it, you will likely think about your own life and the story that you are writing. And like Donald Miller, you'll read it and you'll think of, I think, if you're like me, you'll think of how you can trick up your own life and write a better story. And here's the real kicker to that. If you're like Donald, well, and me, and I hope most people, you'll think about people. Your story, or the one that you would like to write, it will focus primarily on human experiences. And once again, I am reminded of the John Sebastian hit, Stories We Could Tell. The Everly Brothers, they made it famous. But it's the likes of Jimmy Buffett, Tom Petty, who made it better.
Talking to myself again, wondering if this traveling is good. Is there something better to win we'd be doing if we could? And oh, the stories we could tell. And if this all blows up and goes.
The first lines tell the tale. Talking to myself again, wondering if this traveling is good. Is there something else a doing we'd be doing if we could? You know, when we're thinking about our story, I suspect that many of us are wondering that same thing. Is there something else a doing we'd be doing if we could? Mark Knopfler, he surely would say, no, I'm doing what I want. I've watched every interview that I can find online through the years with Mark Knopfler, whether it's him talking about songwriting or talking about people he admires or talking about his own life or his bandmates or the guitar. Yeah, I think he's doing what he wants. And now the falsehood of today's show title. We may not all like or prefer our story, because the internet is filled with anecdotal evidence like, well, Steve Spaulding writes a blog over at howtosplitanatom.com. And as I was Googling, as I am wont to do, and just as you are wont to do when we create content, he wrote a blog post entitled 80% of people quietly despise their lives. Yeah, he admits there's no statistical evidence. It's just his observation. 80%, that seems to be a popular number, though, as evidenced in another post at Business Insider entitled 80% Hate Their Jobs, But should you choose a passion or a paycheck?
Like, anyone can even know that.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks, Kip Dynamite. That's Napoleon's brother. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. How could you possibly know how many people like their story or don't like their story?
Like, anyone can even know that.
I don't think we can know that. I don't think there's any way to know that. But based on the universal gripe factor, it's my own kind of a calculation, UGF, universal gripe factor. Sure seems like a high number of people who are discontented with their story, doesn't it? I mean, for me, it's the anecdotal evidence of just listening to people gripe. Well, that's a large number. And sometimes I'm included in that number, by the way. The irony is that as high as that number may be, that is the number of people who don't like their story. They don't like their lives. They wish they were living a different story. As high as that number may be, and I don't know what that number is, but as high as it is, there may be an equally low number of those people who are actively doing anything about it. Well, unless you consider hope an activity. We like our story better. There is an area of your life where I know your story trumps anybody else's story. Yep. You ready for it? People. The people who are part of your story are most certainly the most important people in the world to you. Well, let's qualify that. The people you love. You may envy somebody's career. You might envy their accomplishments, maybe their possessions, their paycheck, their bank account. But when you look around at the people you love the most, you don't envy anybody. No, lust does not count. So stay focused here. Keep your focus on more wholesome thoughts. Criminal defense or trial attorneys have stories. And they may put in thousands and thousands of hours preparing a story to help them win a case. And if they've been able to construct a compelling story with lots of fact-based evidence and some credible witnesses and plenty of expert testimony, they like their story. But what if their case is weak? What if their case is devoid of any hard evidence to help them? What if they can't find an expert witness that will back up the story that they're trying to create? Well, they won't be caught repeating the show title today. I'm sure every trial attorney has at one time or another said, "I hate our story." Now, you may not be an attorney, though. And your story is your life. So the question is, do you like your story? And if not, what are you going to do about it? I was listening the other day to a podcast by the producers of Better Call Saul, including Breaking Bad creator Vince Gilligan. And he had some pretty smart observations about how Sony and AMC had given him the freedom to pretty much let the story unfold.
Here's the beauty for me, and I want to give hats off to Sony and AMC. I want to give a tip of the hat to them because, let me tell you, I've worked for other networks that, you know, if they got this script that we wrote, they'd be like, wait a minute, you got to explain this. You have to have the scene where Jimmy says to Chuck, "Chuck, how long have we been brothers? How long has it been since you had your terrible, you came down with your terrible allergy to electricity?" I cannot tell you how many places, not to ding on anybody else, but it's like, to me, whether you get it or you don't, who cares?
Right.
And let me be precise when I say that. Yes, ultimately, when it's all said and done, when you've watched the whole run of episodes, you know, mysteries should be uncovered. Your curiosities should be satiated. But the first episode of any series exists to make you want to watch the second episode. Yeah. And I can't tell you, so much of the notes, network notes are, you know, we got to have an arc. We got to have, everything has to be explained in the first episode or else they won't come back. No, if you explain everything in the first episode,
yeah, that's
why would anyone come back? You know, yeah. It's like, come on already. Why is this? This is not rocket science. You, right. You leave people wanting more. You know, your character has to have an arc in the first 47 minutes. You know, it's like, no, that's what the second episode. That's what episodes 2 through 100 are for.
Right.
Otherwise, why are we doing them?
Right.
So crazy.
Right.
But thank God for Sony and AMC. They haven't been honest about that.
And you know, that's how our lives work too. Our lives work just exactly the way Vince Gilligan is creating this new series. We wake up each day and we're not fully aware of what's going to happen to us. I mean, I guess unless we're in prison where life is fully predictable and regimented, or the military. And as much as we may think that we'd like our life to be more predictable, what we really are saying is we really would like our life to be more predictably wonderful. But you know, even predictable beauty after a while just gets to be mundane. The fact that we don't know what's coming next, that's what provides tension in our life. That's what makes life intriguing and interesting. And if it weren't for the pain, then our happiness, it wouldn't be nearly so nice. Our stories all have suspense and tension and some drama. And then there's some comedy, there's some calm, there's some boredom and some routine and love and anger and sadness and happiness. And when we grow tired enough to the experience of one of those things, then we take aim for something else. Now, it may not be conscious, and sometimes it may be. I mean, some of us, we don't enjoy too much tranquility or peace, and so, okay, we intentionally disrupt our lives. Again, maybe intentional, but subliminally or subconsciously. Or we've had our gut full of sorrow, and so we're like, I'm sick of this, so we start chasing laughter a little bit harder. It's the yin and yang of our lives. I fear that too often I don't take the time to do the writing, and I'm using writing metaphorically, to do the writing necessary to create the story that I most want to live. What about you? Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould spent over 10 months writing and figuring out what their new series would be like, Better Call Saul. In that podcast episode of Better Call Saul Insider, they ruminated, they took long walks, they discussed all the various ways that they could produce this show. Where do we start? Where do we start with this character? What's his backstory? Where did he come from? What's his history? These are expert writers. These are highly decorated storytellers, and it took them countless hours and 10 months to figure out an approach. Why so long? Well, because life is full of options, and when you are dealing with a fictitious character like Saul Goodman, created by these guys and other writers, well, man, the whole world's your oyster. Real life is easier in some ways, harder in others. We're not writing our lives, we're living our lives, and things happen to us that we didn't architect, things happen to us that we didn't write, we didn't create. Okay, sometimes we did, but not all of it. And so there's a ton of reaction. What if we devoted just a little bit more effort, though? What if we devoted just a little bit more time and a little bit more intensity into the story that is our own, our life? What if we agonized over details of what we wanted to create, like the writer's room of Vince Gilligan's Clan? What if we did that? Could we craft a better story? Could we craft a better life? You know the answer to that. It's absolutely, of course we could. But we don't do it. We don't do it because we just don't take the time to do it. We spend time doing nonsensical stuff. Just today, I read about a guy. He unplugged from email for a week. Now, lots of people have done this, but it was kind of interesting. He dissected things after he got back. After a week, he had over 1,500 messages. But as he dissected these, only 40 or so were really important. And only 5 needed a response. 5 out of 1,500 needed a reply. Well, he wrote that it changed forever how he is going to manage his email. Because now he's going to check it much less often. Because this 1 week test showed him he can. How many areas of our life are on some sort of autopilot, just like email, just like his? We do it because it's a reflex. We go to the office, we log on to email. We never stop to think that there might be a better way. You know, life has so many unconscious behaviors like that that drive our story. Maybe it's time to question those things. Maybe it's time to consider, how might we make it better if we tried to hack it? Well, it might not work. Okay, so what? What if the email guy went a week and he realized that he had hundreds of urgent messages, all demanding a response? Well, I suspect that he would know he needed to check email more often, not less often. But the point is, by trying something new, he figured something out about his email. He figured out he could change it if he wanted to. Turns out he wants to. And there it is. There it is, the point, once again, buried here at the end. It seems to be focused, this whole thing seems to be focused on our determination and I think our imagination and our dedication to figure things out. And isn't that what leaning toward wisdom is all about, though? Well, of course it is. We want to make sure our story is better. We want to make sure we have a story that we won't, or we don't, regret.
You found a new love. There to say is divine. So glad for your sake. Sir.
His name is Jake Andrews. Kind of got a nostalgic sound, doesn't it? Well, it's not very nostalgic if you're old enough, I guess. Jake Andrews, it's a 1999 record. Time to Turn is the record. I'm glad for your sake, but sorry for mine. That's the song. A lot of people are living their lives like that, man. That's the lyric they're singing. I'm glad for you. Kind of sucks for me. You know, listen, here's the thing. It really doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be bad for any of us. Now, I'm not saying that life is perfect and there's a utopia out there that you can find. You just, stupid you hadn't figured it out. You're smart enough to know that bad things happen to all of us. We all have days and moments that, you know, life just sucks. And it is what it is. But we muscle through it and we do what we got to do. I think really the point for me, and I hope the point for you, is refuse to resign. Refuse to just cave in. Refuse to just give up. Refuse to just accept the fact that, okay, the story's not, it's not what I'd hoped, it's not what I wanted, it's not what I intended, but okay, I just have to go on and accept it. No, you don't. No, you don't. Get busy writing the story that you want. Or at least try. What's the harm in trying? There ain't any harm in trying. Well, unless you're just scared that you'll fail, but how bad could that be? The podcast is Leaning Toward Wisdom. The site is leaningtowardwisdom.com. This has been episode 4052. Plug in that number in the search this website. You can find all the show notes and the links. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. I'd love it if you would leave me a review. Well, I'd love a 5-star review. My name is Randy Cantrell, Dallas-Fort Worth's where I hail from. Coming to you from inside the Yellow Studio.
For your sake.
mind. Yeah.
I'm intentionally trying to shorten things up a little bit. You know, the 45-minute kind of a mark is a mark that I have been kind of fond of as a podcaster. You can do me a great favor if you care to. If you go to the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, right below in the navigation, right below support the podcast, there is a link to a podcast survey. And that survey's up there all the time. If you would just take a few seconds and complete that, just a few quick questions to help me improve the podcast, I'd like your feedback on too long, not long enough. You know, just I'd kind of like to know what your listening habits are when it comes to podcasts. So that's my call to action here in this ending part. Okay, I'm going to play a tune by Josh Kelly. I'm a big fan of this guy, and I've got everything he has recorded, like so many other people that I love. This is a 2007 record, sorry to say four. Josh Kelly, 2007. The title of the record is Just Say the Word, and, well, you'll understand why I'm playing this song, because the title of the song is How the Story Goes. Josh Kelly, enjoy. Gonna blow your mind.